Mr. Fox.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. This case comes here from a grant of a motion to dismiss based upon a finding that the statute of limitations bars plaintiff's claims for a false arrest. This case had its genesis with what we allege to be a false arrest that happened in 2004. That arrest was followed by criminal proceedings, which shortly after that were dismissed. After that happened, very shortly after it happened, in 2004, an indictment issued, and apparently notice was sent to the plaintiff about the indictment. He never received it. Plaintiff failed to appear in court for his arraignment again in 2004, and a warrant issued at that time. Roughly 3 years later, he got picked up on the warrant. He was arrested. He wound up spending 5 months in jail until that case was finally dismissed. In 2008, we timely brought an action for false arrest based upon the 2007 arrest only. We didn't ask for damages for the 2004 arrest. And reminding you that he was arrested and spent 5 months in jail. The 2007 arrest were new charges, different charges. It was based upon the same factual scenario, the same facts surrounding the 2004 arrest, but they brought a different charge. They brought a charge for delivery of a controlled substance as opposed to possession of a controlled substance. So it was a wholly new criminal proceeding with a new case number, a different case number. We alleged in the complaint that the 2007 arrest was caused by what happened in 2004.
Could I just ask you very quickly, when Mr. Brooks was arrested in May of 2004, did the police find any drugs on or near him?
No. According to our client, no.
So didn't he have reason to know at that point that the arrest was effectuated without probable cause? Why couldn't he have sued right then?
He could have sued right then. And there's no doubt. What happened right then was he only did a very small amount of time in jail. I believe it was 3 days, if my memory serves me correctly. And he was done with the case. It was over. He gets arrested again for the same incident, but a new charge. And he does 3 years later, he spends 5 months in jail before the case is dismissed. Now he's sufficiently upset that he's going to do something about it. The district court, on the motion to dismiss, dismisses the case. And in fact, Your Honor, to speak to your point a little bit further, he could have had two cases had he chose to. He could have had a case based upon the first arrest if he would have brought it right after that arrest in 2004. Could have sued for false arrest there, and whatever would have happened following that case would have happened. And then he's arrested on this with a new charge in 2007, and he could have brought a case as he did on that charge after 2007. The district court dismissed the case based upon the Supreme Court case of Wallace v. Cato, holding that the 2007 proceedings, and I'm quoting the district court, were, quote, later proceedings of the 2004 arrest for purposes of accrual of the cause of action. The defendant's focus on appeal was slightly different. They focus on the fact that the plaintiffs should have alleged that the defendants did something after the 2004 arrest in order to have a timely causation element to make the case timely.
What about the warrant? The warrant, you said, was based on the same arrest, but we don't know, and maybe you don't either, that maybe there was other evidence that came in, and there was some evidence of a distribution and some other things. They had other witnesses. Once they found out who these guys were, maybe more investigation. Was that new warrant based on something more than that first arrest?
Well, obviously, we didn't get into discovery, but I can say this. I looked at the court files for both cases. There's only one police report for the 2004 arrest. There's a police report in surrounding the circumstances of the 2004 arrest. There's a slight police report that says we arrested him in 2007, but there's nothing else.
Okay, I guess what you're saying is there isn't some external cause for that second warrant other than whatever was known at the time of the arrest.
There was no external cause for the second warrant. If I'm understanding right, the second warrant, there was only one warrant. There were two criminal proceedings. One, a warrant. The warrant comes out of the second criminal proceeding because he had failed to appear at the arraignment.
Okay.
And he failed to appear at the arraignment because there was no notice to him.
So the second one was just to follow up the first, I guess, with something, I guess, more. I don't know.
They changed the charge, but there was no, as far as I know, there was no new evidence. They just changed the charge to make a delivery as opposed to possession.
Well, then, Is it possible that he really has a claim for malicious prosecution and not false arrest?
I think he has a claim for both. He's falsely arrested in 2007. And our position on that is, even though the warrant, we're not saying the warrant was invalid. It's a valid warrant. The deputies that executed the warrant, there was nothing unlawful with that. But what was unlawful about the 2007 arrest is what caused it to happen. And what caused it to happen were the facts and circumstances surrounding the arrest in 2004.
Well, would he have a statute of limitations problem with any of this?
With
malicious prosecution? Or?
Well, I know in talking with the defense, they claim he does, but we don't think so because his 2007 arrest and criminal prosecution ended in 2007. We filed within a year of that, so he would also, which is the statute under state law, and he would be able to have, it's our position, he'd be able to have a malicious prosecution action for the 2007 criminal proceeding.
In state court.
In state court, correct. What's important is we need to look at what the accrual of a cause of action is. And as defined in Wallace v. Cato, accrual of cause of action is when somebody becomes detained and then legal process happens. In 2007, he was detained and then legal process happened. He also, another definition that Wallace v. Cato uses is that there's unlawful conduct that leads to damages. We allege that there was unlawful conduct in 2007 that led to damages. This was not part of the same proceeding. Wallace v. Cato does not apply to these facts, as we said in our brief, because there's only one arrest in Wallace, one criminal proceeding, and there was only one legal detention, legal process following that detention in Wallace v. Cato. Here, we've got a very different factual scenario, two different arrests, two different criminal proceedings. We are not seeking to toll the 2004 arrest to 2007. That's what they did in Wallace, and that's what the Supreme Court rejected. We're not seeking to toll it. We're just seeking to bring our claim based upon the 2007 arrest. So what it becomes, what it gets down to is a question of causation and what caused the 2007 arrest. And the Seventh Circuit has indicated that causation is defined as if an officer sets in motion a series of events that leads to unlawful conduct, you've got personal responsibility and causation for that officer. We've pled that in the complaint, that the officers that did the 2004 arrest caused the prosecution, the arrest and prosecution in 2007.
What if he were got a traffic ticket or something, or just there's something completely unrelated, and he wasn't arrested? I don't know how he would come before the law where they would find out about this. But is there some other he's out. He doesn't know about it, he says.
Correct.
Suppose he heard about it and just turned himself in more than whatever it is, one time that went by. He said, I didn't know about this. Does he still have a suit?
He'll certainly have a suit.
There's no arrest, in other words.
Well, if there's... But
2 years has gone by.
Right. If there's no arrest, there's no suit for false arrest, but he would still have a malicious prosecution case.
All right. That's in state court.
Correct. But if there's no arrest... then he doesn't have a lawsuit. I'd have to think that one through, but he would not.
But if he just shows up, he heard about it, or somebody said something, so he said, "Hey, well, I didn't do anything." So he comes down in court, and says, "What's this issue about 3 years ago? Somebody said there's a warrant out."
Well, if he shows up in court on his own volition because of circumstances like you've just indicated, and they take him into custody because he's got this,
say taking him into custody is wrong.
He's under arrest at that point.
Basically, we are tolling it, and the question is there some validity to that? I know that the argument about when you have unreasonable force and arrest and that sort of thing, and somebody's in prison, and they don't have they have the problem of filing lawsuit and everything while the time's running, that's an issue that I don't remember exactly where it ended up, but that might be something similar. But that isn't the case here. He's just out on his own.
But, Your Honor, we're not tolling it because, hypothetically, if the officers did everything they did in 2004 but never arrested him and then later got an indictment and then he was arrested in 2007, it would be the same result. It would be the same circumstance. And then he would be damaged in 2007. There was wrongful conduct that occurs in 2004. He gets damaged by it in 2007, and he brings a lawsuit for that arrest. And so we're not asking to toll anything because the damage doesn't happen until 2007. And, in fact, it's... I see my time is almost up, but it's no different. It's really no different than a medical malpractice case. If the medical malpractice happens in 2004 and the patient isn't damaged by it until 2007, that's the only time he could bring the claim for the damages in 2007 or, you know, after that. And that's what we're alleging. We're not. I want to be clear. We are not seeking to toll that. My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. Ms. Hornstra.
May it please the Court. The fourth arrest claim that Mr. Brooks is asserting in this case is premised entirely on his allegation that the defendants arrested him in 2004 without probable cause.
But did you say the fourth arrest?
I'm sorry, his Fourth Amendment claim.
Oh, okay.
There were two arrests. But it's very clear, especially based on Mr. Fox's submissions up here, that the only basis for a claim he has against the defendant officers is that they arrested him without probable cause in 2004. And we know that claim is time-barred. As for his claim based on, he purports to seek recovery for the 2007 arrest, but obviously that doesn't revive a time-barred claim for 2004. I think Mr. Fox concedes that. But beyond that, there's nothing that he alleges about the 2007 arrest that is unlawful. It was, by his own allegations, it was lawfully carried out pursuant to a warrant that was issued based on Mr. Brooks' failure to appear in court following an indictment. His theory is basically that the arrest in 2004 set in motion further events and that therefore the officers who arrested him in 2004 should be liable, that he should have a new cause of action against those officers for every consequential event, everything flowing out from the 2004 arrest. Now, that theory should be rejected. As Judge Robner pointed out, Brooks had a complete cause of action against the officers in 2004 at the time of his arrest.
Now, do we know anything about how indictments are served in these cases and whose fault it was that he never received notice of the May 2004 indictment? Does the government have any evidence to show that he was served?
No, I mean, we are just going on the basis of his complaint, which, I mean, his complaint says that notice was sent but that he didn't receive it. But, I mean, that's a wholly separate issue. I mean, his failure to appear in court, regardless of whose responsibility it was that he didn't get notice of the indictment, I mean, that was the cause of the warrant issuing for his arrest. That's the cause of his arrest in 2007. The indictment itself, as we explain in our brief, reflects an independent determination of probable cause to support the 2007 arrest. But as you pointed out earlier, in 2004, at the time he was arrested, he had a complete cause of action against the defendants that arrested him. He could have brought a suit there. Mr. Fox said, well, apparently he was only detained for a short while. He thought the charges against him had been dismissed. I think he wanted to lay low. And it was only after he was arrested a second time that he thought that he was sufficiently upset to do something about it. Well, of course, a cause of action doesn't accrue when somebody decides that they've been damaged enough by the first wrong. The wrong that the defendant officers here allegedly committed was arresting Mr. Brooks in 2004. In Wallace v. Cato, the Supreme Court made clear that a plaintiff doesn't get to wait to sue on a wrongful arrest until they feel they've been harmed enough. To do that would put the supposed statute of repose in the hands of the party seeking relief.
Well, little devil that I am, at what point could Brooks have discovered that his May 2004 arrest was based on insufficient evidence?
Based on his allegations, he would have known at the time of the arrest. If he was arrested for possession of a controlled substance and he didn't have a controlled substance, he would know that there was no probable cause to arrest him. And so that claim accrued then. His theory seems to be that if there's no probable cause for an arrest, anything that's set in motion any event that happens gives cause to a new cause of action accruing from that. And that's simply not the law. I certainly understand Mr. Fox's point that Wallace v. Cato involved one arrest and a continuing detention, and this is two arrests. But under Mr. Fox's theory, there wouldn't have been a statute of limitations problem in Wallace because Mr. Wallace just could have sued for his entire detention because that was caused. I mean, it was set in motion by the first arrest in the same way that an arrest in any case will nearly always set in motion further proceedings. But if the plaintiff has a complete cause of action, that cause of action for false arrest accrues at the time of the arrest, and there aren't new tort claims every time there's some potential consequential damage flowing from that. And again, here, even the 2007 arrest, it's really not even fair to view it as a consequential damage because of the intervening cause of the indictment, the warrant that issued for his failure to appear.
But there are, I have some trouble because, let's say, what reason would he have had to know that the May 9th arrest was based on an unreliable tip?
The original arrest.
Yeah.
I don't know that he would have had a basis to know that at the time of his arrest, but he would have known. I mean, he would have known he was injured. He would have known he had a cause of action. I don't know that he would have had a cause to know immediately at the time of his 2007 arrest that the original arrest was based on an unreliable informant. I mean, the details of why an arrest is without probable cause aren't something that you have to know to have a cause of action.
What if he, let's pretend that he had assumed that the charges were dismissed because the jail was full, or the police officer didn't show up, or the prosecutor had a more important case. What I'm trying to figure out is how he could know that his initial arrest was defective until he was rearrested and in 2007. And, of course, then he's able to trace the 2007 arrest, which everyone says was unquestionably valid. Until then, he wouldn't have known that he had an outstanding warrant. It's so convoluted.
He didn't know that he had an outstanding warrant. But again, if as he alleges, he had no drugs, he was arrested for a drug-related charge. I mean, a false arrest happens at the time of the false arrest. And any later proceedings that arose from that, and I understand that there was a separate set of charges, but even if things... I mean, even if the 2004 arrest was a but-for cause of everything that happens, there's not a new constitutional tort that arises every time there's a consequence of that. And this Court's decision in Reed is instructive on that point because there the plaintiff tried to bring a malicious prosecution claim, and, of course, this was before Section 1983 malicious prosecution claims were clarified. But, the plaintiff there had a time-barred false arrest claim and said that set in motion the prosecution and tried to assert a malicious prosecution against the officers. This Court said, no, at bottom, your allegation is that the officers arrested you without probable cause. That's a false arrest claim. That accrued at the time of the arrest. And without something more after the arrest, you don't have new causes of action against those officers. And there, too, there was an indictment that the Court said even if there was some improper influence later in the proceeding, that would break the chain of causation. That's absolutely the same situation here. There's nothing more. And actually, Mr. Brooks's reply brief clarified things to a great extent. I think here in our brief we had discussed, why the complaint shouldn't be read to allege anything beyond the 2004 arrest. He's made absolutely clear this claim is really just based on the 2004 arrest, and it doesn't give rise to anything new in 2007. It's really an effort to piggyback a false arrest claim from a new arrest onto a time-barred false arrest claim. And again, Mr. Fox has discussed that he's bringing issues of causation, and those are issues of fact. The discussion in Reed about new causes of action, accrual, intervening causes was also on a motion to dismiss. It's plain from the facts alleged in the complaint that he has no cause for an unlawful arrest in 2007 tied to the defendants who arrested him in 2004. The judgment of the district court should be affirmed. Thank you very much.
Mr. Fox, your time had expired, but you may have an additional minute.
All I'd like is 1 minute.
That's what you have.
Thank you, Judge. Judge, I want to quote. Ms. Hornstra said, a false arrest happens at the time of the false arrest. That's when a case accrues. He was arrested in 2007. That's an arrest. He suffered damages at that point. Under Wallace v. Cato, that's when it accrued. Then you look at causation. If we can tie it, if the officers in 2004, and according to the Seventh Circuit language, set in motion a series of events that led to the 2007 arrest, then we have a cause of action that's timely based against those officers for what they did in 2004. And if we look strictly at the definition of accrual based on Wallace v. Cato, this case is timely. And getting into other hypotheticals or trying to tie it back in to say it's tolling is just not accurate because there is two separate arrests with two separate proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. Thank you, Ms. Hornstra. The case is taken under advisement.